Hello and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. It's time again to celebrate Halloween with the spooky drama that was so exciting on radio. There are no special effects as vivid as the ones your imagination can make. Today we have two episodes of classic horror from the series Suspense. We have a horror story starring Peter Lorre with a very twisted ending, and then a whimsical, though frightening, tale written by James Thurber. First, we have Suspense, The Devil's Saint, starring Peter Lorre, first broadcast January 19th, 1943 on CBS.
This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. Our star tonight is Peter Lorre, playing the part of the Hungarian Count Stefan Kohari, a gentleman of sinister aspect. The story is by John Dixon Carr, who calls it The Devil's Saint. If you have been with us on these Tuesday nights, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue you, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation, and then withhold the solution till the last possible moment. And so, it is with The Devil's Saint and Mr. Peter Lorre's performance we again hope to keep you in suspense. The Devil's Saint. Paris, 15 years ago. Paris as it used to be, when lights twinkled from the old Trocadero to the hill of Sacré-Cœur, when taxicabs honked and the beat of tango swayed, and Chinese lanterns gleamed above the lake in the Bois, when, in short, you and I were young. Come then to the President's Ball at the Opera, St. Catherine's Day, 1927. A fancy dress ball at the Opera, filling these marble halls with a multitude of masks and a multitude of dreams. The mosaic decorations are no less bright than the colors that weave here. Harlequins and Columbine, Cleopatra and Musketeers. In the great marble foyer, remember it? They have set out little tables and lines of palms behind which you may sit screened. Look at one such table. A young man wearing the scarlet and gold uniform of an English Guards officer in Wellington's day. A dark-haired young girl in the costume of a Bacchante. And as we approach...
Ned, don't, please, you mustn't.
Well, why not? You really don't mind, do you?
No, of course I don't mind, only you mustn't. Oh, Ned.
Look here, Alona, we've got to settle this thing. You have enjoyed being here tonight, haven't you?
Ned, I've loved it. After being cooped up at my uncle's place in the country, it's like heaven.
All right. When I take you back to the hotel, I'm going to face this uncle of yours tonight.
No. No, please don't.
I'm going to say that you and I intend to get married, and that's that.
I can't marry you, Ned. I've told you that.
But why not? Just give me one good reason.
Because I can't. My uncle, he would never allow it. Never.
And that seems to you a good reason enough?
Yes, Ned.
This uncle of yours, what's his name?
Count Stefan Kohari.
He's a Hungarian, I think you said.
Yes, so am I. My mother was an American.
What's he like, actually?
Oh, he's a little eccentric. Hmm? Oh, please don't misunderstand. He's a great scholar and a historian, only he's a little strange. He... Ned.
What is it?
There he is now.
Your uncle?
Yes, that elegant man in plain evening clothes with the Order of the Golden Fleece across his chest.
Oh, I see him. Oh, he looks as black as a thundercloud.
He's throwing those two dressed as devils aside as though they didn't exist. Give me my mask quick before he sees us.
No, Ilona.
Why not?
We'd better face this out now. Sit still.
Good evening, Ilona.
Good evening, Uncle Stefan. Uncle, may I present Edward Whiteford?
How do you do, sir?
How do you do? Ilona, do you think that costume is quite the thing to wear in public?
Why not?
Well, an older generation might call it immodest. It looks like...
Like what?
Nothing. Will you go and get your cloak or your domino or whatever you wore here?
Uncle, please don't make me go home so soon. It's hardly 11 o'clock.
I was not asking you to go home, my dear. I was merely asking you to put on a wrap.
All right, I'll get it. You stay and talk to Ned.
I shall be delighted.
Will you sit down, sir?
Thank you. You seem to have quite a gathering at this table.
Yes. Some friends of mine from the embassy. They're upstairs dancing now.
Well, look, glasses, glasses, and still more glasses. You know, I was quite an adept once at musical glasses. Have you ever tried it, young man? Well, it's very easy. You take a spoon like this, you see, and like it.
Well, forgive me, sir, but there's something I'd like to ask you.
Yes?
Well, I don't know exactly how to say this, so I'd better say it in the shortest way. I want to marry your niece. Well, look out, sir. You smashed one of the glasses.
A few francs will pay for that. But there are other things of higher value, at least to me.
Well, maybe I ought to mention first that my full name is Lord Edward Whiteford. My father's the Earl of Grey.
Indeed.
Well, I only mention that to show we're, well, respectable enough. Well, the British ambassador will vouch for me, sir, if you'd like to ring him up.
And perhaps I ought to mention that I've always kept Ilona carefully guarded from the world.
Almost too carefully guarded, don't you think?
That, Lord Edward, depends on my reasons.
Sorry, sir.
You have known Ilona about how long?
4 days.
4 days. You wouldn't even choose a business partner in 4 days. Yet to want to marry my Ilona... After 4 days.
But we know our own mind, sir.
You do, huh? Then you know more than the wisest man in this world. However, as one whose dearest wish is Ilona's happiness,
I hope it is, Count Kohari.
Do you doubt what I say?
Oh, no, sir.
Well, I will make you a proposition. I own an estate in Touraine, not far from Paris, a little chateau, a few hundred acres, fishing. Very good stable of horses.
I know. Ilona told me.
Oh, she did. Well, then here is my suggestion. Why not come down and visit us for a week or two?
Why, that's very decent of you, sir.
Oh, not at all, not at all. And if at the end of that time you're not cured of this infatuation...
Then... Oh, it's not an infatuation. I swear it's not.
No? Well, if at the end of that time you're not cured permanently of this feeling, you may take Ilona. And with my blessing. That's fair, isn't it?
Oh, it's more than fair, Uncle Harry. I don't know how to thank you.
Oh, well, please, don't even try. And at least I can promise you a very interesting experience. You see, at the Chateau d'Azay, there is one certain bedroom. We call it the tapestry room.
Yes?
Well, I assure you, it'll be very interesting for you to sleep in that room.
Why? Is it haunted or something?
Oh, no. No, 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 not haunted. Well, now, if you don't mind, I shall say good night, and I hope I can trust you to bring Ilona safely to the hotel. Au revoir. Look over there.
What is it, sir?
Just look. Streams of our fellow guests pouring down the main staircase. Shapes of nightmare. Shapes of delirium. Insane dead masks. Only the eyes move. Wouldn't we be terrified, perhaps, if he would look behind those gargoyle faces?
Oh, I don't think so. They're only ordinary people like ourselves.
That sure is where you make your mistake. Well, I shall expect you for the weekend, and encore une fois, au revoir.
Ned! Ned!
It's all right, Ilona. You can come out from behind those palms.
What was he saying? I couldn't hear.
Ilona, it couldn't be better. Well, he's a very decent old boy, actually. And he's invited me to the Chateau d'Azay.
Did he say anything about the tapestry room?
Yes. He invited me to sleep there.
And you said?
I said I would, naturally.
You mustn't do it, Ned. I won't let you do it.
But why the devil not?
Because everybody who sleeps in that room dies.
dies? Are you serious?
Oh, Ned, please don't do it.
Oh, nonsense. There are a lot of superstitions about every old house.
This isn't a superstition, Ned. It happened once when I was a little girl. A man insisted on sleeping there. They found him dead in the morning.
So? How did he die?
They don't know. There wasn't a mark on his body. He wasn't shot or stabbed or strangled or poisoned or hurt in any way. He was just dead.
Two nights later, in the province of France, now known as Indre-et-Loire, but once called Touraine, the ancient land beloved of Rabelais and Balzac. But now, as the wind moans down the valleys, and rain flickers across the apple trees, and thunder stirs in those haunted hills, it can bring little comfort to a young man driven in an ancient carriage from the railway station along snake-like roads. To what destination? Ahead, a lift of lightning shows the gray walls and conical slate-roofed towers of a chateau set some distance back from the road. Lights shine from its narrow windows, dimly seen through the rain as...
Driver! Coachman!
Oui, monsieur.
Is that the Chateau d'Azay up ahead?
Oui, monsieur. I will take you to the very door if...
If what? Why do you cross yourself?
If I am permitted.
What should stop you?
Only fear, monsieur. And I am not much afraid.
Listen. What was that?
Only the dogs, monsieur. They keep many dogs, large dogs, at the Chateau d'Azay. Well, here we are. Bonsoir, monsieur. And if I may be permitted a word of advice.
Well?
Beware of the tapestry room.
There isn't a bell on this door. There might at least be a knocker. Ah, got it.
Et alors, monsieur? Vous cherchez?
Je cherche le Chateau d'Azay.
Perhaps it would be better if monsieur spoke English, yes? You are Lord Edward Whiteford.
Yes.
Monsieur is expected. Please to enter. Monsieur's at and cool.
Thank you.
Ned.
Hello, Ilona. Oh,
darling. I brought the farmer petite for the uncle.
Oh, you'd better not kiss me, Ned. Madame Flay says to look out for my uncle. Madame Flay is our housekeeper.
Oh. Well, where's your uncle now?
In the drawing room. He's playing the piano. Come along.
Ilona, is anything wrong?
Oh, everything's wrong. Two of my dogs were in horrible pain this afternoon. Dr. Solomon had to put them out with chloroform.
You don't think that...
I hope nobody's practicing, that's all. Well, here we are.
Oh, nice tiger skins on the floor. I say, who's the little old man with the gray beard sitting over there by the fire?
That's Dr. Solomon.
Oh, hasn't he funny-looking eyes?
Watches and watches and watches. He's an old friend of the family.
Shh, come along. Let's get this over with.
Ah, Lord Edward. Well, I see my niece has anticipated me. Welcome to the Chateau d'Azay.
Thank you, Counselor Harry.
Oh, you must be very wet after your long drive. Go up to the fire and warm yourself. Madame Flay.
Yes, monsieur?
Please tell Antoine to take our guest's luggage up to the tapestry room.
The tapestry room, monsieur?
That is what I said, Madame Flay.
Yes, monsieur.
An odd coincidence, Lord Edward. Dr. Solomon and I were just discussing the fate of the last person who slept in a tapestry room.
This is not good, my friend. This is against my advice.
It's against his advice. Here, Dr. Solomon croaked.
This is not good, I tell you. It is the wrong season of the moon.
The wrong moon. But there is no moon tonight. It's raining cats and dogs.
Don't talk about dogs.
Nevertheless, it is the wrong season of the moon. I say no more.
Cheerful blunder, that doctor.
Don't do it, Ned. I won't be responsible if they make you do it.
Look here, Count Kohari. What did happen to the last bloke who slept in the tapestry
room? You mustn't call him a bloke, sir. He was a very saintly gentleman. The Bishop of Tours. That was some time ago when Delona was only 15 years old, but surely she must remember it.
I remember it.
The church, said our bishop, has no use for superstitions. Well, he insisted on sleeping there. I made it as comfortable for him as possible, but he was found dead next morning, with a crucifix still in his hand.
Was it poison?
There was no poison, monsieur.
No. Here, Dr. Solomon.
It's true, Ned.
Well, there were just two very curious things. You see, in connection with that death, on a mantelpiece there was found burning a stick of incense. Just ordinary incense, nothing wrong with it.
Yes, sir?
And under the dressing table, the police found it was an empty jar of ointment. Now, here's your wits. A dead man, some burning incense, and an empty jar of ointment. What do you make of that?
Oh, I don't make anything of it. It's crazy.
Please do not speak like that.
I'm sorry?
It is still the wrong season of the moon.
Well, what I really meant, sir, was this. Is there any reason for this story of death?
A reason?
Any legend attached to the room or anything like that?
Yes, there is.
Well, sir?
Well, we are a very old family, Lord Edward. Old and perhaps accursed. When my ancestors moved from Hungary to France in the 17th century, they brought certain beliefs with them. The old religion.
The old religion?
Yes, the cult of Diana, the cult of Janus, the cult of freedom and fertility. The witch cult, if you prefer.
Oh, now look here, sir.
Must we talk about this?
Well, you smile, but when I say the word witch, you think of some humorous picture on a Halloween's card. It was very different in the Middle Ages, believe me. Then, my friend, there existed an organized religion which rivaled the church. There were many to worship unashamed at the Grand Sabbath. Many to receive all favors from Saturn, their master, and to dance forever, joyously in the red, flaming quadrilles of hell. Some 200 years ago, an ancestress of mine, Katerina Kohari, was tortured to death in a tapestry room for professing the old religion. Many persons have not thought it safe to sleep there since. Are you answered?
Oh, come, sir. This is some kind of elaborate joke.
Joke? The Bishop of Tours did not find it a joke.
Not the mark on his body. I assure you as a physician, not the mark on his body.
No, not a mark on his body. Here, Dr. Solomon.
Yes, I hear him.
Well, understand me, Lord Edward, there's no compulsion in this. If you do wish to sleep in that room, all right,
oh,
if you
ridiculous.
Don't...
Oh, ridiculous. I'm not afraid to sleep there, sir.
Well, I thought perhaps you wanted to change your mind.
Oh, never. Would you like me to make a wager on that?
What sort of wager?
Well, if I spend the night in this famous room and come out of it alive...
Yes?
Will you give your consent to the marriage immediately? Tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning? Why?
Because I don't think the atmosphere of this house is good for a loner. Well, what do you say? Will you do it?
Very well, Lord Edward. I accept the terms of your wager.
Don't do it, Ned. For the love of heaven, don't do it.
High up in the north tower of the Chateau d'Azay, under the conical slate roof, is the circular room hung with faded tapestries. These tapestries move slightly with uneasy, mimic life to the clamor of the storm outside. Candles burn along the mantelpiece and beside the great four-poster bed. The flames of these candles waver, too, as the door opens.
This is the tapestry room, monsieur.
Thank you, Madame Fleur.
That is the mantelpiece where the incense burned. That is the bed where Monseigneur le Bishop died.
Very inviting, isn't it?
Will there be anything else Monsieur requires? Some sandwiches, a decanter of whiskey?
Oh, no, thanks. I had a drink with the Count Coheri before I came upstairs.
Bien, Monsieur. Monsieur's shaving water will be brought up in the morning, if he requires it. Good night.
That little hoppy. Trying to scare a fellow out of his wits just because... Oh, well, they've built a good fire anyway. Didn't realize how cold it was. Temperature must have dropped. What's that?
It's me, Ilona. May I come in?
No, Ilona. Get out of here.
That's not very gallant of you.
No, I mean, I don't want you exposed to whatever it is.
Ned, listen. Are you going to bed? Or are you going to sit up all night?
I'm going to sit up all night, naturally.
Then let me sit up with you.
No.
Why not?
Well, it may be dangerous. Besides, I promised your uncle I'd go through with this alone.
I wish you hadn't had that drink with him.
Why? He couldn't have done anything to it. It was you who poured it.
Yes, that's true, only... Listen.
Is that?
It sounds like footsteps.
Yes, but where's it coming from?
Seems to be right here in the room.
It seems to come from all directions.
Doesn't it sound like somebody walking between the walls?
By George, it is someone walking inside the wall. Get behind that tapestry, Ilona. Quick. Hide there.
Yes.
Count Coheri, where did you come from?
Oh, forgive me, Lord Edward, for seeming to appear out of the wall and between the tapestries. Like Mephisto appearing too fast, huh? And this red dressing gown perhaps adds to the effect, too.
How'd you get here? A passage between the walls?
Yes, exactly. A little device my ancestors for visiting this room. You know, they invented that when its occupant was so unmannerly as to bolt the door.
Door's not bolted. You could have walked straight in.
But I couldn't have done it unobserved.
No. Maybe not.
Have you had any other visitors, Lord Edward?
No.
Are you quite sure of that?
Quite sure.
Well, then, since nobody saw me come here, I'll just sit down by the fire. Please sit opposite me.
Is this the showdown, sir?
I don't understand.
Well, there's got to be a showdown between us. Is that why you're here?
Oh, I am here, young man, to explain certain things to you. Will you have a cigarette?
Thank you.
Oh. They're perfectly all right. That is what you're afraid of?
I'll have one, yes.
A light?
Thank you.
Well, when I was discussing the witch cult a while ago, you didn't appear to think I meant what I said.
Do you want a perfectly frank answer to that?
Yes.
I think you're mad enough to mean anything.
What you say, in a sense, is quite true. Seeing an old and inbred family like ours, the mind can crack in the fantasies of witchcraft. Become as real, well, more real than the living world. Let me give you an example.
Go on.
The saucer on the table beside you is Ming porcelain. It was once owned by Katerina Coheri, a martyr of the old religion. Yet you are using it as an ashtray.
Oh, I beg the witch lady's pardon. I'll blow off the ash.
Well, that's a very dangerous remark, sir. Don't you understand that the worship of evil can be strong and compelling as the worship of good, that the devil can have his saints too, that the sick brain which knows but can't help itself, you have profaned this room merely by entering it, and therefore you deserve to die.
Like the Bishop of Tours?
Exactly.
You're not going to tell me the devil killed him?
The devil's agent may be flesh and blood.
Then it was murder.
Oh, of course it was murder. Murder? So cunningly contrived that no one ever saw through it.
Go on.
I asked you before to use your wits on this problem. Well, look, incense was burned in this room. You know why?
Suppose you tell me.
Well, obviously, I think, to conceal something else, which would be too easily noticed.
To conceal what?
For instance, the smell of chloroform.
Chloroform?
Yes. A drug not well understood by laymen. Dr. Solomon, by the way, was using chloroform this afternoon to dispose of some dogs.
So I've heard.
Well, Dr. Solomon is old and very forgetful.
You mean chloroform could be stolen?
Oh, yes, it could be easily. Now, suppose I take a pad saturated with chloroform. I place it over the mouth and nostrils of a man already sleeping or drugged so that he gets no air.
Wait a minute. That won't do.
Why not?
Chloroform burns and blisters when it touches the skin. You'd leave marks.
Oh, not at all, my friend. Not at all. If I first covered the mouth and nostrils with some substance like...
Ointment.
Yes. Now you're waking up.
Hi.
Now observe what follows. In a few seconds, unconsciousness. In 2 minutes or 3 minutes, death.
Certain death, yes.
Oh, but chloroform, you see. It evaporates very quickly. There is no trace in the stomach since nothing has been swallowed. Well, delay your postmortem for 24 hours. Very easy matter in these country districts, and no trace remains in the blood. Murder without a mark, Lord Edward. Murder without a mark.
You can't do it, Count Kohani. There's one thing you're forgetting.
What is that?
I'm not sleeping, and I'm not drugged.
Oh, yes, you are.
How? When? In the cigarette?
Hmm? No. In a drink you had with me.
What was it?
Morphine. And you've had enough to put 3 men to sleep.
Ah. Huh?
See, that's it. Well, try to get up.
I'll do it. I'll do it.
You see? You've knocked over the fire irons. You'd have been in a fire yourself if I hadn't caught you.
Take your hands off me.
Just as you please.
Oh, if I could reach that bell pull.
Well, but you can't. Well, better sit down again.
You murdering lunatic. So that's how you killed the Bishop of Tours. And that's how you're going to kill me.
Who, I? Well, you don't think I killed the Bishop of Tours.
Didn't you?
You fool. I'm not trying to kill you. I'm trying to save you. Dr. Solomon.
Yes, Monsieur.
Well, come out. Come in the room. Come out and be my witness.
Yes, monsieur. I shall always guard the family honor, even when I guess how men die.
This young man evidently thinks I've been talking about myself. Am I, in a popular parlance, insane?
Oh, monsieur. Heaven forbid. I have never known a saner man.
Have you any notion, Lord Edward, why I brought you to this house? You would never have believed me if I had merely told you. So I had to bring you here to show you.
Show me what?
What?
Look at the tapestries.
Come out of there.
I'm behind them.
Come out of there. Hey, come out.
Ilona.
Yes. Yes, Ilona. Why do you think I've kept Ilona so well guarded from the world? Why, at a fancy dress ball, for instance, did I object to the costume of a medieval witch whose dogs were poisoned so that chloroform should be brought? Who poured the drink drugged with morphine?
In the devil's name, what are you trying to tell me?
It was Ilona. She's been helplessly, hopelessly insane for more than 10 years.
Closes The Devil's Saint, starring Peter Lorre. Tonight's tale of suspense. This is your narrator, the man in black, who conveys to you Columbia's invitation to spend this half hour in suspense with us again next Tuesday.
William Speer, the producer, John Dietz, the director, Bernard Herrmann, the composer-conductor, and John Dixon Carr, the author, are collaborators on
Suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have another episode of Murder, Mayhem, and the Supernatural from Suspense. Author James Thurber, who created The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, about a timid man who is a hero in his secret imagination, explores the power of imagination when a modern man gets caught up in the duel between Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. With the musical Hamilton bringing new popularity to that piece of history in song and rap, this delightful ghost story is very timely. Enjoy Suspense, A Friend to Alexander, first broadcast August 3, 1943 on CBS.
Suspense. This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, we bring you two of America's most artful and distinguished stars. From the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer studios comes Mr. Robert Young, and from Warner Brothers, Miss Geraldine Fitzgerald. Mr. Young and Miss Fitzgerald are with us to play in an unusual tale by the unusual James Thurber. An excerpt from the book, My World and Welcome to It, called A Friend to Alexander, adapted for radio by Freya Howard, is tonight's study in Suspense. If you've been with us before, you will know that Suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue you, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation, and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment. And so it is with Mr. Thurber's poignant and strange story and the performances of Robert Young as the man who was a friend to Alexander and of Geraldine Fitzgerald as his wife, Bess, who relates these events to us. We again hope to keep you in suspense.
He was a laughing, happy-go-lucky fellow before he began to have those dreams. I guess he was pretty much like dozens of other men who go to work every morning, settle down in soft chairs with their newspapers after dinner, and like a weekend in the country now and then. He was fond of easy living and good times. Like everyone else, he talked of the war, rationing tires, and his golf scores. Until those nightmares began to plague him. First, I was amused.
You know, I've been dreaming about Aaron Burr every night.
What for?
Well, how do I know what for?
Aaron Burr is a funny person to be dreaming about nowadays.
Why?
I mean, with all the countries in the world at war with each other.
What's so funny about dreaming?
Maybe you're upset.
Well, everybody dreams, don't they?
I don't see why you'd see Aaron Burr in your dreams.
Well, I do.
Where do you see him?
Oh, places. In Washington Square, or Bowling Green, or on Broadway.
Even here on 55th Street?
Mostly downtown. I'll be talking to a woman in a Victoria. A woman holding a white lace parasol.
Oh.
And suddenly there will be Aaron Burr. Bowing and smiling and smelling like a carnation. Telling his stories about France and getting off his insults.
Who is the woman in the Victoria?
Hmm? What?
The woman. Who is she?
Well, how do I know? You know about people in dreams, don't you? They're nobody at all. Or everybody.
Ah, but you see Aaron Burr plainly enough, though. I mean, he isn't anybody or nobody. Or everybody.
All right. You have me there, but I don't know who the woman is.
Are you sure?
What's more, I don't care. Maybe it's Madame Jumel or Mittens Willett or a girl I knew in high school.
Who's Mittens Willett?
She was a famous New York actress in her day 50 years ago or so. She's buried in an old cemetery on 2nd Avenue. I've seen the tombstone.
That's very sad.
Why is it?
I mean, she probably died young. Almost all women did in those days.
He's a vile, cynical cad. I was standing and talking to Alexander Hamilton when Burr stepped up and slapped him in the face. When I looked at Hamilton, who do you suppose it was?
I don't know. Who?
My brother, Walter, the one I've told you about. The one who was killed by that drunk in the cemetery.
Harry, I never could get that story straight.
I've told you about it a dozen times. This drunk came up to him when his back was turned and...
What was he doing in the cemetery?
That's not the point. He was killed. That's what's important. And I loved him very much.
I don't understand what...
What's the use of telling you every time I mention it? You start asking the same questions.
I understand now, dear. When you looked at Hamilton, he was your brother Walter.
Yes.
Harry, maybe we ought to go to the country for more weekends.
Weekends?
Yes.
I'm going to bed.
For a time that evening, I worried about Harry. Not about his dream. Why shouldn't he dream? But I wondered about his health. He looked so worried somehow, so unlike himself. I was glad when he went to bed. A good night's sleep was just what he needed, I thought. How could I know? The next morning, we were quietly eating our grapefruit when Harry flung down his spoon.
I wish he'd go back to France and stay there, him and his Lala.
Who, dear? Oh, you mean Aaron Burr. Did you dream about him again?
Yes, he said Lala to me.
Why should he say Lala?
I was at the tavern and we were drinking ale and I said something funny. I don't remember what it was. Something amusing about what Ben Franklin had said to Washington once. It was one of those things, you know.
No, I don't. Have some more coffee, dear.
I don't want any coffee. I made this remark and everyone laughed. Everyone but Burr, that is. He sort of sniffed. And then he said, Lala.
Well, why not? I mean, is there anything wrong about him saying Lala?
It was the way he said it. He was sneering at me. They all noticed it.
Who, dear? Who noticed it?
The others, all of them. And Hamilton. I was there with Hamilton. It was swell until Burr came in. Aaron Burr.
I don't see why you dream about him all the time. Don't you think you should take some Luminol?
I'm not sick, I tell you. I know what I'm dreaming.
I just thought, well, it's always Burr, and that seems odd.
Well, why? Why shouldn't I dream about Burr if I want to?
But you don't want to.
No, but I can't help it. Everywhere I go with Alexander, sooner or later Burr shows up and makes those nasty remarks. Last night he elbowed Alexander out of his way. Did it deliberately.
Alexander?
Hamilton.
Oh, Alexander Hamilton.
Yes, goodness knows I'm familiar enough with him by this time to call him by his first name.
Harry, you know, we might go to the old Drovers Inn this weekend. You like it there.
Hamilton has become not only my brother, Walter, but practically every other guy I've ever liked.
Don't you like the old Rovers Inn anymore?
Isn't it natural that Hamilton should represent my brother and guys I like? That's natural, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose it is.
Well, then why are you looking at me like that?
You know, dear, I wish you'd go and see Dr. Fox.
I don't want to see Dr. Fox. I want Aaron Burr to stop sneering at me in my clothes. He looks at me and his lips curl up and he says, Lala, Mr. Andrews, what odd taste you have.
I wish you'd go and see Dr. Fox.
I'm going to the zoo and feed popcorn to the rhinoceros. That makes things seem right, for a little while anyway.
I thought he'd forgotten all about that ancient pistol duel. Because for 2 days after that, he lost his haggard, tired look and actually seemed cheerful. But one night, about 5 a.m, he came into my room in pajamas and bare feet. His hair disheveled and his eyes wild.
He got him. He got him. The rotter got him. Alexander fired in the air and smiled at him. Just like Walter must have smiled.
Like Walter? Oh, yes, dear. Your brother Walter, who was killed in the cemetery.
This was at Weehawken in New Jersey.
What? Your brother?
No, Hamilton and Burr. The duel. Hamilton had a white ruff around his neck. Burr was in black tights, French clothes. Alexander lifted his pistol and fired in the air and then smiled at Burr. And then that fiend from hell took deliberate aim. He took so long. He meant to take his time about it. I saw him grin. And then he pointed his pistol at Alexander and fired. He killed him in cold blood, the foul scum.
Oh, darling. Don't, darling. Here, dear. Take some of these pills.
I don't want them.
Oh, take it. You'll feel better.
I don't want any, I tell you.
Here, darling. Swallow. Please, swallow.
All right.
There. That's better.
The cad. The rotten, sneaking cad. He grinned just as he fired. And Alexander clutched himself at the stomach. Then shook his head and tried to walk forward. And he fell. With his mouth open as though he wanted to say something. And Burr stood there. Grinning.
He was better after that, but I kept urging him to see Dr. Fox. At first he refused, but later he decided to humor me. He was humoring me by this time, and Dr. Fox, too.
How you been feeling, Doc?
Oh, fairly well, Mr. Andrews. My pulse has been a just what seems to be the trouble?
Nothing. Nothing wrong with me.
He has nightmares.
You look a little underweight. Perhaps your diet.
Oh, I'm not underweight. Overweight, maybe, but not underweight.
Getting enough exercise?
Same as usual.
He's worried about something. He always has this same dream.
Aha, a dream, eh? What kind of a dream?
Just a plain old dream. Aha.
No, it isn't. It's about his brother Walter, who was killed in a cemetery by a drunken man. Only it isn't really about him.
Really? Why, very few people are actually killed in cemeteries. It's an interesting coincidence, if I may say so.
You mean you know somebody who was killed in a cemetery, too? Is that the coincidence?
No, I meant your brother being killed in a cemetery. You know, dead in a cemetery. A sort of, do you follow me?
No. I think you should go see Dr. Fox, Dr. Fox.
Interesting. Yes, very interesting. I wonder if you'd mind stepping into the next room, Mr. Andrews. I want to give you a thorough examination. Right in here, sir, and we'll just have a look at you.
Well, I hope you're satisfied. You heard what he said. There's nothing the matter with me at all.
I'm glad your heart is so fine. He said so, you know. He said your heart is fine.
Sure it's fine. My heart's fine. Everything's fine.
And you know what I was thinking?
No, what?
I was just thinking that now that Alexander Hamilton is dead, why, you won't see any more of Aaron Burr.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right.
But I was wrong. Aaron Burr did not leave my husband to sweeter or more peaceful dreams. Harry said nothing about it for several mornings, but I could tell he was still being tortured by those ghosts. He brooded over his breakfast. He didn't answer me when I spoke to him. I dropped my butter knife, and he jumped.
What was that?
Only my knife.
Oh.
Harry, are you still dreaming about that man?
Oh, I wish I hadn't told you about it. Forget it, will you?
I can't forget it with you going on this way.
Can't you forget I mentioned it?
Maybe you should see a psychiatrist.
Oh, bosh.
What does he do now?
What does who do?
Aaron Burr. I don't see why he keeps coming into your dreams now.
He goes around bragging that he did it with his eyes closed. Says he didn't even look.
Didn't look when?
When he killed Alexander in that duel.
Well, what?
He claims he can hit the ace of spades at 30 paces blindfolded. Furthermore, since you ask what he does, he jostles me at parties now.
I think you should stay out of this, Harry. It wasn't any business of yours anyway. And it happened so long ago.
I'm not getting into anything. It's getting into me. Can't you see that?
I see that we've got to get you away from here. Oh, maybe if you slept someplace else for a few nights, you wouldn't dream about him anymore.
I don't know.
Let's go to the country tomorrow. We'll stay at the Lime Rock Lodge.
Bess, why can't we visit the Crowleys? They live in the country.
All right, fine.
Bob has a pistol, and we could do a little target shooting.
What do you want a pistol for?
Plenty of open space.
I think you'd want to get away from shooting.
Yes. Sure, dear.
The vacation seemed a success at first. When we arrived at the Crowley's house in the cab, I thought I'd left my suitcase at the railroad station. Harry laughed his old normal laugh for the first time in many days as he found the bag and handed it to me. And then he leaned over and kissed me.
Good old Connecticut.
Oh, Harry, this is wonderful.
Oh, we'll have a grand time, Bess.
Yes, dear.
Hello, Bess.
Hi, Harry.
Here they come.
Good old Bob. Remind me to tell him that rabbit joke.
Hello, Madison.
I'll take your bags, Mr. Andrews.
Thank you, Madison. Good to see you.
Thank you, sir.
Hello there.
Bess, what a wonderful
Well, day. Bob, I how's the old country squire?
Oh, fine. How have you been?
Never better. Boy, it's good to be here. Hello, Alice.
Well, you too. I'm so glad you've come. It gets kind of dull here in the hinterland.
Oh, I'm glad, too.
Say, wait till you get one of our extra special cold martinis into you. You'll feel ship shape.
Still know how to mix them, huh?
Better never. Get lots of practice these long country winters.
Oh, it was grand, seeing Harry's face relaxed and smiling over his cocktail glass. When I went to bed that night, I felt that at last that nasty old business of the dream was over, and I was happy. But when I awoke the next morning... When I awoke, I saw my husband lying rigid on his back, staring at the ceiling.
One Henry Andrews, an architect.
What's the matter, dear?
Nothing.
Oh, why don't you go back to sleep, Harry? It's only 8 o'clock, and this is the country.
One Henry Andrews, an architect.
What are you talking about?
That's what he calls me.
Calls you who?
One Henry Andrews, an architect, he keeps saying in his nasty little sneering voice. One Henry Andrews!
Harry, please don't yell. You'll wake the whole house. It's early. People want to sleep.
I'm beneath him. I'm just anybody. I'm a man in a gray suit. Be on your good behavior, my good man, he says to me. Or I shall have one of my lackeys give you a taste of the riding crop.
Why should he say that to you?
You ask me why.
He wasn't such a great man, was he? I mean, didn't he try to sell Louisiana to the French or something behind Washington's back?
He was a traitor.
Then why worry what he says?
He was a scoundrel, but a very brilliant mind.
I was in hopes you weren't going to dream about him anymore. I thought if we came up here...
It's him or me. I can't stand this forever.
Neither can I. As I had expected, Harry spent most of the afternoon with Bob shooting at targets. At first, they just aimed at the paper squares... It all seemed to be good-natured and in fun. After a while, Harry stood with his back to the dead tree trunk on which the targets were nailed. Then he walked 30 paces ahead in a stiff-legged manner, and his face was set in stern lines. His revolver was at arm's length above his head when he turned suddenly and fired. Bob dropped to the ground, scared.
Hey, what's the big idea, Harry?
But Harry didn't answer. He started to walk back to that dead tree trunk again. Then, with his back to the target, he began marking off the 30 paces. Bob called to him.
I think they kept their arms hanging straight down. I don't think they stuck them up in the air.
But my husband continued to count off. At the 30th step, he lowered his arm, wheeled about suddenly, and fired from his hip.
Hey there, watch out!
Two of the shots missed the tree, but the last one hit it. Like a mechanical man or someone in a trance, Harry began to walk back to the tree again without a word. His lips tight, his eyes bright, his breathing coming fast.
And look, it's my turn!
But Harry about-faced and stalked on. This time when he fired, his eyes were closed. Poor Bob didn't know what to make of this strange behavior.
Hey, good heavens, man, give me that gun, will you?
Without a protest, Harry let him have it. For the first time, he spoke.
I need a lot more practice, I guess.
Well, not with me standing around. Come on, let's get back to the house and shake up a drink. Gee, I've got the jumps.
I need a lot more practice.
I guess I must have slept soundly that night, because I didn't hear him leave the room. He must have crawled out of bed, dressed silently, and crept out of the room. The sun was just coming up, and the light was hard, and the air was cold. Then I heard the shot.
Harry!
I threw on a dressing gown and ran downstairs. The Crowleys were in the hall.
Oh, good heavens, Bess.
Is Harry all right?
It sounds like it.
Where is he? What's he doing?
It sounds as though he's out behind the studio shooting.
Oh,
Alice.
Oh, now, now, take it easy, Bess. Bob will go out and get him. Maybe he had a nightmare or walked in his sleep.
No, no, he never walks in his sleep. He's awake, all right.
Now, let's go down and get some coffee. He'll need some.
Yes, I'll need some, too. Hey, what the dickens is the matter with him, anyway?
I don't know. I'm so sorry.
Bob, you go get him.
At your service, madam, alive or dead.
Bob, stop it.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Come on, Bess. We'll go to the kitchen.
What's that noise?
Where?
In the kitchen.
Oh. Oh, it's you, Madison.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you're shaking.
I was just wondering, ma'am.
No, it's all right, Madison. You go on back to bed.
Clotheta was scared, ma'am, and I thought...
Well, you tell Clotheta that it's all right. Mr. Andrews is shooting a little. He couldn't sleep.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
I don't know what to do, Alice. I guess the Crowleys were relieved when the cab came to drive us to the station early that day. Their maid had threatened to leave. The neighbors were complaining about the early morning disturbance, and their own nerves were ragged.
Boy, I'll need a drink after that.
Yes, and make mine a stiff one.
Gee, I'm sure glad he's gone.
Well, it was either he or Clotheta. You can't afford to lose a good cook these days.
Say, what do you think's the matter with him?
I don't know. It's what Clotheta would call the shoots, I guess.
You know, he said a funny thing when I went out and got him this morning.
Well, let's have it. I could stand a funny thing.
I asked him what the deuce he was doing out there in that freezing air with only his pants and shirt and shoes on, and you know what he said?
What?
I'll get him one of these nights. That's just what he said.
By this time, I was really frightened. When we returned to the city, Harry was a picture of gloom. Our first night back, I looked at him as he lay on the chaise longue in my bedroom in his blue dressing gown, smoking a cigarette. He was haggard and tired, and he kept biting his lower lip. I mixed a scotch and water nightcap for him.
No, thanks. No liquor. I need a steady hand. Watch my hand. Does it tremble?
No.
Is it steady?
Yes, very.
That's good. That's very good. You need a steady hand, you know.
For what, dear?
Oh, things.
Harry, will you sleep in my room tonight?
No, you keep shaking me all night to keep me awake. You're afraid to let me meet him.
Are you still on that?
Why do you think everybody's better than I? I can outshoot him the best day he ever lived.
Oh, of course,
dear.
In the
waistcoat. Right next to the middle button. He has three big pearl buttons on his waistcoat. Came from France.
Why don't you dream about somebody else? Anybody else, please.
You'd like that, wouldn't you? You'd like to have me dream about somebody who wouldn't hurt a fly. Somebody like that. Because you'd know I'd never get in a duel with him.
A duel? You're dreaming of a duel now?
Ever since Hamilton died. Burr knows I hate him. It's nearly over now.
Harry.
It's him or me. I'll get him, the rotter.
But Harry...
I know I'll get him. You see, I have a modern pistol. He has to use an old-fashioned single-shot muzzle loader.
Is that quite fair?
Fair? What do I care if it's fair or not? Was it fair the way he shot Alexander? Was it?
Don't be mad with me, Harry.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling.
I'm very unhappy.
I'm sorry, darling.
And I'm worried sick.
Well, I'm sorry, darling. Don't cry. Please don't cry. It upsets me when you cry. And I mustn't be upset. I must be very calm and rested. My hand must be steady tonight. Especially tonight.
Oh, I'm so worried, Harry.
Don't worry about me. I'll be all right. I'll be fine. My hand is like a rock.
Later, when I kissed him goodnight, I knew it was really goodbye. He didn't say anything, and neither did I. It's just that he seemed so far away, in another world, and each moment I felt that he was becoming more and more remote. Something told me he wasn't coming back. I couldn't sleep. After an hour of tossing and turning, I went to Harry's room.
He was sleeping peacefully. I sat down in his chair and watched over him for a long while. Then, finally, I must have fallen asleep.
A beautiful morning.
It was about 5 a.m. when I awoke. Harry was talking in his sleep.
Ah, yes, the doctor. Good of you to come, doctor. Yes, often misty at this hour.
Harry.
Are they loaded? Splendid.
Harry, wake up.
Yes, I'm perfectly ready. Is Mr. Burr? He is? Good. Shall we proceed? No, I do not care to make a statement. Very well. Yes, I understand perfectly. 10 paces. Turn and fire at the dropping of the handkerchief. Yes, 10 paces.
Harry.
Thank
Harry.
You for acting as my second, Mr. J. Of course, extremely good of you. Very well, then I'm quite ready. 1, 2, 3.
Harry.
4.
Harry, please.
5.
Don't, Harry.
6, 7.
Harry.
8, 9, 10.
Harry. Harry, dear. Harry. Dr. Fox was puzzled when he examined Harry the next morning.
Extraordinary. His heart was as sound as a dollar when I saw him the other day.
He seemed to be fine, Dr. Fox.
I can't understand it.
What?
Why his heart stopped as if he'd been shot.
Shot?
Yes. Of course, there are no gunshot wounds and no...
Shot.
Now, Mrs. Andrews.
That's it. Shot.
Now, you'll have to calm yourself. You can't help him now.
I should have known it would happen. I kept staring at Harry's right hand. The 3 fingers next to the index finger were closed stiffly on the palm, as if gripping the handle of a pestle. The taut thumb was doing its part to hold that invisible handle tightly and unwaveringly. But it was the index finger which held my eye the longest. I looked carefully to make sure I was right. Yes. Yes, it was so. That index finger was curved inward slightly, as if it were about to press the trigger of a pistol. So there had been a duel after all. Perhaps there was no gunshot wound. But Harry had been shot as surely as he was dead. Dr. Fox saw me staring and spoke to me.
What are you looking at, Mrs. Andrews?
Harry never even fired a shot. Aaron Burr killed him the way he killed Hamilton.
Well, what are you talking about?
Aaron Burr shot him through the heart. I knew he would.
Yes, but there's no evidence.
I knew he would. Then Dr. Fox put an arm around me. He looked at me gently and a bit frightened, the way I used to look at Harry when he told me about his dreams. He led me to his assistant and whispered something. He thought I didn't hear him, but I did.
She's crazy. Stark, raving crazy.
I let the assistant take me away. Maybe he thought I was crazy, too. But now, I knew. Aaron Burr got Harry. Just as he had killed Hamilton in that old quarrel long ago. Oh, I knew he would! I knew he would!
So closes A Friend to Alexander, starring Robert Young and Geraldine Fitzgerald, the James Thurber story, which was tonight's tale of suspense. The producer of these broadcasts is William Speer, who with Robert Louis Cheyenne, guest director, Freya Howard, author, and Bernard Herman and Lucien Marowick, conductor and composer, collaborated in presenting A Friend to Alexander.
Now CBS is pleased to announce that beginning August 17th at 10 to 10:30 Eastern Wartime, Mr. Robert Young, whom you've heard as star of tonight's Suspense, will begin a brand new CBS series entitled Passport for Hunter. Passport for Hunter will bring you each week the adventures of an American newspaper reporter among the people of the United Nations. Next week's broadcast will be written and directed by Norman Corwin, with music by Bernard Herrmann. And the stars, we have said, will be Robert Young.
This is your narrator, the man in black, inviting you to be with us next week at this same time when, with Miss Agnes Moorhead and with a repeat performance by popular request of the play called Sorry, Wrong Number, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying, so long for now.